Chris Mosier was the first transgender athlete to represent the United States in international competition on Team USA's sprint duathlon men's team in the 2016 World Championships. Last year, he became the first open transgender male athlete to compete in an Olympic trial alongside other men. He couldn't finish the race. He was injured. He says New Zealand's Laurel Hubbard competing in Tokyo has been meaningful not only to the trans community, but personally, as he spent the last decade of his life trying to lay the groundwork for this moment. He's the founder of transathlete.com, which is a resource to find information about trans inclusion in athletes at various levels of play. And Chris Mosier joins me from Chicago. Hi, Chris.
Hi, thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure. I wonder how much has actually changed, because a number of us were really secretly hoping that Lauren Hubbard did not get a medal, because if she had got a medal, she would have been in a world of pain. Do you not think?
Yeah, unfortunately, I think that a lot of people felt that way. And, you know, it's an unfortunate position to have to consider her safety and also her hopes and dreams as an athlete. Unfortunately, the environment that was created by the fervor of the media, as well as people who lack an understanding about what it means to be transgender, really created an unsafe situation for Laurel to be her best athlete self on the world stage.
What does it mean to be transgender?
You know, it's not just one thing, and there's not just one way to be transgender. The trans community is as diverse as any other community of people in the world. And I think that what is lost on people, particularly in the aspect of sports, is that trans people play sports for the same reasons as anyone else. It's for our love of the game. It's for the camaraderie and friendship that we receive from being on teams and participating with other people, and the mental, physical, and social and psychological benefits that come from playing sports.
We've got a number of communications from listeners this morning who say words to the effect of, Laurel Hubbard shouldn't have been there. If you're born a man, you cannot compete in the women's section. End of. Biology wins. You're born a man, you're a man. Born a woman, you're a woman. And also a lot of feedback from people who say that young people are being damaged by the idea of gender fluidity. They are being harmed because they are told that they have a choice which is not necessarily reversible. That's a long way of telling you about some of the opinions that you will be all too aware of. How do you respond to them?
Well, you know, every national governing body and sports association, as well as every sport in the world, has a policy or has to deal with, if they don't have a policy, the permissibility of any participant participating in their sport. And so Laurel satisfied all of the requirements of New Zealand, of her sports national governing body, and of the Olympics in order to qualify and earn her spot there like every other athlete. And, you know, the other thing I'd say about that is no one is born a man. We're born babies. Every single one of us is born a baby, and we figure it out from there. You know, we put a lot of stereotypes and myths, and there are a lot of misconceptions about what it means to be a man or to be a woman. And, you know, I think what we're figuring out now in sport, and not just because of transgender athletes, but also as we're seeing many cisgender women, so people who are not transgender, in the Olympics, who are being policed in their bodies because of their excellence in their sports. And so we're at this really critical moment in terms of
gender.
You mean
police to make sure that they haven't got too much testosterone in their systems?
Correct. And you know, all of this is based off of data that's really unclear. You know, if the science was clear, we wouldn't be having this conversation. It'd be a very cut and dry issue, right? But the studies that people have used to sort of weaponize testosterone against the trans community to try to keep us out of sport has really been, you know, picked and chosen based on what they want it to say. There are not good studies about transgender athletes. There are not good studies about trans women in general and their performance. And so, you know, we're really missing a lot of information. And, you know, one of the things that people say is that this is the end of women's sports. And, you know, we've had out trans athletes from Renee Richards almost 50 years ago. And it was the very same conversation then. It was, this is going to be the end of women's sports. Trans women are going to dominate, you know, and here we are so many years later having our first transgender Olympians.
I've spoken to a scientist who has said that testosterone is not necessarily an enhancing hormone. And so, you know, you can put that aside if you like, but can you put aside the fact that Lauren Hubbard, for example, was trained with a man's muscle and bone structure, which has advantages which may continue now she is a woman?
You know, it's an interesting position, and particularly for Laurel, because, you know, she's a power lifter. She needs to be big. All of those women who are competing are substantial athletes. They are large. They have muscles. That is what they need for their sports. You know, but this is the, Laurel is often used as the stereotype for all transgender athletes. And what we fail to recognize is that there's not just one body type or one set of skills that lends itself well to all different sports. For me, as an example, I'm an excellent duathlete. I've competed on Team USA, represented our country 6 times, you know, but I swim like a rock. And I can tell you right now that I can barely get a bag of groceries on the roof of the car, let alone I'm not lifting the weights that the women were lifting, you know, in the Olympics. That's just not happening. And so we all find the sport that's suited to us. And testosterone is not the it factor for any athletic performance.
But nobody's going to, with all due respect, complain about you, because you were born female and decided to be male.
Well, I was assigned female at birth, but I'll tell you, the only thing that I decided was to tell other people who I really am. And I knew at a very young age, and you referenced young people and this idea of causing irreversible harm and influencing, there is no trans agenda. I hate to break it to your listeners. We have no agenda. I'm just trying to live my life in the way that I know I was meant to live. And I knew from a very, very young age that I wasn't quite like my brother, but I was most certainly not like the other girls in my class. And I had a very strong sense of self of how I should show up in this world, how I should exist in this world, and how I should be treated in this world, and how people should refer to me. And that was, I was 4 years old, and I can guarantee you that was not influenced by any person around me, because the messages that I got from adults, from coaches, from my peers, was that I was doing girl wrong, that I was showing up in a way that wasn't okay. Trans people, the only decision that they make is to let other people in on their truth. So being trans is not a choice. Telling other people our truth is the choice that we make.
Can I just ask you, when you say you were doing girl wrong, is that not a problem of the definition of girl?
In other words,
well, you know, it's if you had been in a different social milieu and girl wasn't, I don't know, perhaps as stereotyped as it might have been, could you have done girl better?
You know, I never would have fit into the social structure of girl in any country, in any location, in any social class, in any neighborhood, or in any sport. That's just not who I am. But I think that you have a good point, right? The stereotypes that we have about, and the expectations, the social expectations that we create for what a girl or a woman should be, and how a boy or a man should act, are very different. And they're different in Chicago, Illinois, where I'm currently at in the United States, versus where you are at broadcasting right now. And so, you know, there are different expectations, but I think that generally speaking, we have a sort of common reference for how people think that a girl should be in the world. And that's just not who I was ever. I couldn't force myself, because like many trans people, I tried to force myself into that box and it just didn't fit.
Yeah. I'm just wondering whether it's the size of the box that society has created that is the problem. And how are you worried about young people having reassignment surgery or medication too early?
No, it's really important. You know, we're facing this right now, this, I would call it a crisis in the United States, of lawmakers for the first time ever in the last 2 years trying to introduce laws that would prevent trans people from both playing sports with their peers at the youth level and in some case at the university level, and then also trying to prevent gender-affirming care for transgender youth. And what I think people don't understand is that these decisions are made with doctors, with parents or guardians, and they're made with the best medical intentions in mind. No young person is having sex reassignment surgery. No young person is having, surgery under the age of, in the United States, they were saying like 13-year-olds. It's just not happening. The puberty blockers or the medication that some young people are able to access, you know, that is reversible actually. So as soon as one would stop that, puberty would kick in again. So those medications that young people are prescribed are actually okay. And should a young person decide that that's not the path that they should take, they would be okay. They'd just be a little bit behind in their process of going through puberty. But I can say, you know, as a person who didn't have access to that, who didn't have the language or terminology when I was a young person, I wish that I would have had access to that, because it would save me in my present form in today, it would have saved me a lot of trouble, of worries, of concerns and anxiety about my body and about how I was showing up in the world.
Do you think that we will get to a stage where gender is seen as much more fluid?
You know, the young people are saying, yes, we will, because more and more young people, at least in the United States, based on our studies and statistics, more and more young people are identifying as gender fluid, as non-binary, or as something other than completely feeling like a man or a woman. And so that information tells me that already young people are feeling more fluid. They're starting to change the way that the systems exist to say, you need to make space for me. We're seeing it in sport policy. We're seeing it in schools. We're seeing it in recreational activities. We're seeing it in marketing, in clothing. Things are becoming less gendered, less specific, because really it's a benefit to everyone. You know, to gender deodorant as an example, you know, limits your market by about 50%.
Do you think that kind of society then would make it unnecessary for reassignment surgery? That you could be who you are without, you know, having your breasts removed?
Well, not everyone chooses to have surgery. And I think that's another very important point. One does not need to have surgery in order to be trans. And having surgery doesn't make one more trans than other trans people. It's a personal choice. And people have surgery. It was previously called sex reassignment surgery. And now more often is called gender alignment surgery, because it helps us be in congruence with our body, with the way that we've always seen ourselves, or the way that we feel most comfortable. You know, I can say it doesn't matter what the world would be like if it was more accepting, if it was the same as it is now. For me, showing up in the world with breasts was inauthentic. It felt wrong. I always envisioned myself as a young person having a flat chest and a six-pack abs, and you know, I was pretty darn sad when puberty hit and that wasn't going to be the case. And I needed to align my body with myself to be able to fully show up in this world and feel like myself.
Can you understand? I mean, I barely want to go here because the kind of response that we get.
Then don't go there.
Well, I'm going to go there because we've only got 2 minutes left in the program, and so what the hell? From feminists who say, we don't want men pretending to be women. We don't want men with penises coming into the women's restroom. We don't want men who have not experienced the patriarchy as we have to join our club. They have been called, perish the thought, TERFs, or trans-exclusionary radical feminists. They hate that, but we'll put that aside for a moment. What do you say to them?
We cannot have equality, equity, or liberation for women unless we include trans women within that. And when you have a trans woman in a women's restroom, you have zero men in that restroom. Trans women are women, and they belong in women's spaces. You know, this is the thing is, we don't know what's in anybody's pants next to us. And we've been using the restrooms in public spaces with other people around us for my entire life. And you don't know what's going on in the other person's pants, nor do you need to know. That's not what makes someone a man or a woman. And I think this idea of sort of weaponizing the penis to exclude trans women is harmful to all women.
You got any message for Laurel Hubbard? She won't be feeling that great right now, I imagine.
You know, Laurel made history at the Olympics this year. And at the end of the day, she is an Olympian. She earned her spot there like every other athlete. And I mean, I can tell you from personal experience, I understand the heartbreak of not performing on the day of a big race. And, you know, I withdrew from the Olympic trials because I tore my meniscus and just could not finish the race. But, you know, the sadness that comes with that is substantial, and it's very real. But at the same time, I was ranked 12th in the entire country, and I'm very proud of that. You know, Laurel was even higher than that. She made it to the world stage. She broke so many barriers and became the very first known transgender woman to participate in women's sports in the Olympics. You know, she really paved the way, not just for transgender women who come after her, but really for every young trans and non-binary person who's looking for examples of success in the areas that they want to go. And more than that, she started a global conversation about trans people in sports. And I'm just so incredibly proud of her. And, you know, she's an Olympian. She made history, and I'm so proud of her.
Thank you. Appreciate your time. Chris Mosier, who was the first transgender athlete to represent the U.S. in international competition.